Music from Buddy Green, bringing in the Sheaves. 12 minutes past the hour. It's Broken Road Radio Monday, and welcome along. We've got the whole team on today. David Donald Punt has joined us, and Heike is here. Heike, good morning to you, Heike Dodge.
Good morning.
And Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. Garden Valley, just in the regions east of Dallas. And you know, I'm not sure what that looks like east of Dallas. Don, describe your landscape for us a little bit.
Well, it's hilly here.
It is. Okay.
So it's wooded and hilly for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
The land that is pretty clear of trees. I mean, folks had to work hard to clear the trees. But, yeah, it's grasslands. This actually quite a bit different than Dallas. So if you're used to Dallas, which is pretty flat.
Yeah, it is flat. That's kind of what I thought. That's what I pictured but a place called Garden Valley, you presume, is a valley. So
yeah, you know, there's we are in a little bit of a valley, and mm-hmm. there's hills. There's not mountains, but there's mm-hmm. hills, you know, kind of all the way all around this.
Got some rivers and creeks, some moving water there.
Not so much moving water. I have a pond in my in my backyard, actually is part of an aquifer system. It comes from a little bit further higher up from us, and then our pond flows into another pond on the other side of Highway 110. So
something other than a river valley, then, is what it is. It's just a plain old valley. Yeah. Dr. Don is a biochemist. He's a member of the board at Creation Moments. And joins us regularly Monday mornings, and we typically talk about science versus faith and creation versus evolution and this versus that. And today, the topic is beekeeping, and I've heard for a number of years that bee populations are really taking it on the chin, and people are scrambling to find out why. We're talking about an article that's available to you, to everybody, over at Mercola.com, and if you go to Mercola.com while we're talking, just search beekeeping. I'm sure it'll pop up real quick. Otherwise, I will include it as a link on our podcast later on today of this conversation. Dr. Don, why are bees important to us?
Oh, gee whiz. Besides being able to sting us, that's not the main importance, but there's an interesting theory about that, by the way.
No.
But yeah, they obviously, bees is the creature that God created to pollinate, you know, all the flowers and the vegetables and the trees, anything that, you know, has pollen, bees kind of go after.
And now, is that true of insects generally, or particularly true of bees?
No, particularly true of bees. Mm. Yeah, no, they take the pollen and they. You know, ultimately turn it into honey, but it is food for their larva, you know, mm-hmm. the growing bee insect. So they're very, very important to what we see around us. You know, most plants, for example, pollinate and have flowers. And so, the bees, you need something to pollinate. Now, some plants are self-pollinating, but most foods, vegetable foods that we eat today are not self-pollinating. They need to be pollinated with bees.
Now, are we talking about one kind of bee, or are there many kinds of bees?
It's primarily the honeybee, but of course there's different kinds of honeybees. Mm-hmm. Bees.
Okay.
But it's, primarily the honeybee. And you'll see honeybee farmers, for example, they'll take their hives and they'll place them in fields, farmers' fields, not only to, it benefits the farmer, but obviously
that's kind of the next point I wanted to bring up, because a lot of us don't realize that there is a honeybee industry, and it's not about making honey necessarily, honey for sale, like you see in the grocery store or in your natural food store, even natural organic kind of honey products, but it's really about farming. Their customers are farmers, aren't they?
Well, they are. And this article actually points out one of the big farmers in California, the almond tree farmers, for example, the almond farmers. And they rely very, very heavily on beekeepers and beekeepers bringing their hives to their almond groves to pollinate the almond flower, which then obviously turns into the almond. So,
yeah, the article talks about 800,000 acres of almond orchards in California, and it's 100% pollinated or dependent upon bees to be pollinated, and that's 80% of the world's almond supply. So bees, obviously, very important to them. It's in the article goes on to say that 1.5 million beehives from all around the country are delivered to the orchards where the bees' pollination efforts take place over the course of just a few days, the largest mass pollination effort in the world. That's got to be something to see.
I would think so. I mean, that's, I mean, it's a logistical problem, I'm sure, to get all the hives there from around the country. And one of the reasons it's talked about in this particular article is because this last season, they didn't have enough hives to didn't have enough bees to, you know, pollinate all the almond trees. So their yield this year is going to be a little bit lower than it was, you know, last year and the years before.
Well, they're talking about what, 50 to 90% of the bees disappearing. I mean, that big a chunk.
Yeah, and that's the point of concern, mm-hmm. because if the if we can't figure out what in the world's causing, it's called colony collapse disorder, and it's just a general name to say something's causing these bees to die out all of a sudden. And we don't really quite understand all that is happening, but we have some good guesses as to what's going on here.
What are some of the threats that have been identified?
Pesticides and insecticides, obviously, are one. And so if a farmer, for example, or if us, because we don't like roaches and things in our house, so we call the pest control person, and they come out and they put down pesticides. Well, the pesticides are dangerous, to the bees. The nicotinoids and some of them, like imidacloprid is used pretty extensively as a insecticide, both agriculturally and domestically.
Well, that suggests that farmers could be their own worst enemies then.
Well, they could be, because you're trying to obviously protect your crop from being eaten by all kinds of insects. But at the same time, when you're spraying your crops, if you do it at the wrong time, then you could affect your bee population. The bees can then ingest this insecticide or insecticides like this, and they bring it back to the colony. And their new young that they've got in the hives, the larvae, then eat the honey and eat the pollen, and of course they die, and the worker bees die, and pretty soon you don't have a colony anymore. Mm-hmm. And if the queen obviously gets it, then there's no more eggs being formed. So
another interesting finding mentioned in the article is that electromagnetic fields, EMFs, or electromagnetic radiation, researchers have discovered that when a cellular phone is placed near a beehive, the radiation generated in the frequency range 900 to 1800 megahertz is enough to prevent bees from returning to the hive. And that was reinforced by another study, apparently over, it looks like India, perhaps. Found the same thing. And you and I have, we've talked here about electromagnetic radiation and wondering if it has detrimental effects. I know there have been stories in the past about cows and livestock underneath power lines suffering some sort of side effects, some sort of disabilities, they think, due to the electromagnetic radiation. But now it's all over. I mean, everybody with a cell phone is emitting RF.
And the cell phone towers, which are, obviously put up all over the place these days, mm-hmm. and more are going up each day. They're, it's interesting, interesting reference that apparently there's something in the bee that can sense the frequency, and it keeps them away. I mean, it's got to take a lot to keep, a worker bee, for example, away from the hive, especially when he's full of honey, full of pollen. and he's coming back, you know, to deliver his pollen like he's supposed to. And you have a, you know, just a simple thing like a cell phone, and you wouldn't think, well, gee, a cell phone's not going to produce that much, you know, electromagnetic, you know, radiation frequency. It, you know, it's not that powerful, but apparently it's powerful enough.
Well, when you've got thousands of them within a square mile, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
well,
another.
And obviously the cell phone itself may not be producing that much power, but the, you know, the cell phone towers are producing a lot of power because they've got to send the signal, you know, for miles.
Heike, do you have a sense of what electromagnetic radiation might be doing to plants and wildlife? And you're sensitive to this stuff. No,
in a word, no. That's kind of a topic over my head. But as I'm listening to you talk, my mind is just drifting to out the window, actually. My eyes are drifting out the window, and I'm looking at my 12-acre hay meadow, and I'm thinking, maybe I need to offer it up to a beekeeper and see if he or she would like to put some beehives out on my property, and then maybe I'll get a free jar of honey out of a deal.
Well, it could even be
that's
better.
That's kind of where
that.
My mind is wandering right now.
I think I'd shoot for a case if I were you. And there are bee companies here in East Dakota and in neighboring Minnesota, and they're famous for trucking up their beehives and hitting them south in the winter. They evacuate the premises come winter, and then bring them back.
Well, yeah, and if you've seen, I mean, they have big semi-trucks where they load up their hives, and they ship them, obviously, not only to California, but other places that, you know, need the hives. Another, you know, problem with the that they think is causing the beehive collapse is kind of malnutrition. Now, you would think, okay, honey is honey. I mean, pollen is pollen, and it wouldn't matter. But apparently, the bees actually need a diversity of pollen. So it's not just, you know, well, we'll just feed these bees almond pollen, for example. They need a lot of different types of pollen. Just like, you know, if we just ate one thing all the time, that wouldn't be good for us. Well, apparently, that's the same thing holds for the bee, you know, population. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing, but the other, you know, the thing that is also been put into question is genetically modified crops, and how that there seems to be a correlation that this colony collapse disorder actually started about the time genetically modified foods or, you know, crops came into being.
It would have been 1980s, probably.
Yeah, the late, I think it was the late 80s or so. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, it's an interesting, you know, correlation.
Well, apparently more and more acres have been planted in corn and soybeans, each of them genetically engineered. And not only that, does that diminish the variety of foods available to the bees, the habitat, but subjects them to eating genetically engineered corn. And I gather there's something in that, and we've talked about this before, something in that genetically engineered product that is deadly to the bees.
Well, and there one of the things is the BT. When you hear BT, you know, corn, BT comes from a bacteria. That particular gene comes from a bacteria that its specific purpose is an insecticide. So you don't get you know, the corn borers and things eating the corn plant, and then by you know, destroying the plant or destroying the corn, they start to chew on it, and of course it kills them. Well, this is getting into the pollen as well. And so when the bees come along, well, guess what? They have the same problem. Hmm. It's not healthy for them either. And it's not healthy for us either to eat, you know,
those
products.
Talked about that. You know, I was watching Fox News last night, and John Stossel's show had a segment on genetically engineered corn in particular. And John started the show by holding up an ear of corn, which was a nice-looking ear of corn, maybe, you know, 12, 14 inches long, nice, robust, healthy-looking ear of corn. And he said, without genetic engineering, this would be as big as your thumb. Now he's going back, you know, centuries to when it was a plant native to this hemisphere and its original small size, and through cross pollination and through, you know, hybrids and so forth, it has grown to the big succulent ear of corn that it is now. And he said, without genetic engineering, we wouldn't have this. And he used that as a defense.
Yeah, that's not completely accurate, because there was agricultural practices, and Heike can probably speak to this, where hybridization is different from genetically engineering.
I can speak briefly on it. Genetically engineering is where you actually take DNA out of one animal or organism and inject it into the DNA of another. That's GMO. Hybridization is taking two perfectly normal organisms and breeding them together. For instance, some of these super cows that you're hearing about, they're not genetically messed up. They're just taking two amazingly athletic, perfectly lean, very muscular animals and breeding them and rebreeding them and rebreeding them until you get basically a new breed of cow that has zero body fat and looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh.
You can also do that with tomatoes. You can do that with apples. You can do that with a number of things. And it does happen naturally in nature, but we just accelerate the process and maybe we make combinations that nature would take a lot longer to do.
Now, David, so. I thought she was describing you for a second there. Where is he? David, where are you?
You're talking about the Arnold Schwarzenegger part?
Yeah, the Arnold, that part about it, yeah.
I wonder, you know, what my parents did to result with me.
And they were clearly superior specimens themselves.
Yeah, but, yeah. Sure. I mean, they were much shorter.
Yeah.
Don, do you think that and this part of the increase in corn crops, particularly in this country, and its suggestion that this is reducing the bees' diet, this is a semi-new argument. I've not heard this before. Do you think it plays a larger role than the increase in pesticides, or about the same role, or something in between, kind of a blend? Are we looking at a larger problem where we just can't find one boogeyman and point to it and say, that's the one?
Well, yeah, I think it's multifaceted, but GMO is certainly exacerbating the problem, because you've got not only the the pesticides, well, you know, with GMO crops, certain types of crops, you're using a little bit less pesticides. So that's a good thing. But we have millions of acres and acres planted in corn, for example. So you've got a monocrop. And so the bees, you know, they don't have the diversity in their, food chain to help them, you know, survive. It's like if we ate only corn, especially genetically modified corn, we wouldn't live too long because of the lack of nutrition in the corn, for one thing. But it's only one crop, and God intended us to eat all kinds of vegetation and vegetables and stuff. So that is a problem. But then there is the issue, apparently, with like I said, the genetically modified grain itself, that and the pollen from those plants that are also causing a problem, because this you don't just get a accelerated colony collapse, for example, just because we've switched over to genetically modified foods or crops. There's got to be some correlation between them. What the exact mechanism for it, they may not completely understand yet, but it's got companies, well, the major company, for example, Monsanto. Really concerned about this. They are so concerned that they bought a bee research company, and or trying to do their thing, which is, gee, when we have any negative press against our products, we buy the research to make it show that, oh, it's kind
of come out with our own findings. Yeah, and Monsanto was part of the discussion on the John Stossel show last night, and I got to admit, I was a little disturbed with the show. I normally like the way John presents information, but he was rather flip with respect to any threat from genetically engineered crops. And I'm reading Dr. McCullough's headline here, and I'm thinking there's another problem in getting this message out. I'm going to read the headline: Beekeeping Industry Doomed. Might we see destruction of food supply before the end of this decade, he says. And with florid headlines like that, how do you get people to... And he might be right, but it sounds alarmist, and it sounds like crying wolf. And I'm wondering, Don, what do you think of that technique of communicating? Are you still there? No, we think we've lost the call. We lost everybody. Oh, well, we'll work on that in just a minute. I'll tell you what, we'll start some music and resume the conversation in just a few moments. These are the Birchfield brothers. See if we can get Don and Heike and David back with us. It's Nancy Sinatra along with Lee Hazelwood, Dan Summer Wine. I think we got over our high-tech problem here, and we've got Dr. Don Clark back with us, and Mikey's back with us, and I guess I'm the only guy that got lost, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know exactly what happened, but I think a reboot just solves about everything that could go wrong. So it seems to work, and we're back. And we were talking about the bee population, the crisis that honeybees are facing all across the country, and a crisis posed by the presence of vast acreage of genetically engineered corn and soybeans and the use of pesticides and radio frequencies. And I was beginning to talk, Don, when I got lost out there, about what I think is another problem. And I was reading the headline from the article on Mercola.com. It says, beekeeping industry doomed. Might we see destruction of food supply before the end of this decade? That would strike most people as kind of a florid description of the problem, kind of sensationalist, wacko, right-wing kind of approach to information. Do you think that discourages serious consideration of these issues?
Well, yeah, obviously the headline is meant to get your attention. Well, it got mine because I clicked on it.
Yeah, but there's so much out there these days that we need to filter out information. I think individually we're more intent with emails and Facebook and Twitter with filtering out the garbage that we get. How do we recognize it when something important really comes through? Do we take the time and stop and think or not?
Well, yeah, we need to certainly critically analyze where the information is coming from, and if you can trust the source of the information, then even if the headline is sensationalized like it is here, there might be something to to the article, to the information that hey, we better perk up our ears and see if we can get it. Now, the problem, I think, with so much communication going around these days with the internet and radio shows and television shows and all these, everything that we could possibly watch or listen to or read, is that good information does get buried, because if you have a reasonable, headline to your article, it's not going to be read. You know, people just aren't going to pay attention to it. So it's, are you talking about...
Well, of course, there's nothing new in that, because for eons, newspapers have sensationalized headlines to get attention on the newsstands. And tabloids do that today, but we're so inured to it, I think, that we tend to ignore it when we see something as a statement this strong. Do you think there's a possibility that the food supply will be destroyed by the end of the decade because of this problem?
Well, I think it's hard to predict.
Is it a valid threat here, though?
It's a threat. I think it's something that we should be concerned with. I think one-third of our food crop, for example, is pollinated. Mm-hmm. By bees, and so it's something that we need to look at. That you know, this could be a grave concern. I mean, we could be having food shortages for a number of reasons. I mean, we were talking about the impact of weather and what that has, of course. Mm-hmm. But disasters like this, where you can't keep your bees going every time you start, the colony collapses for whatever mm-hmm. reason. That is a big problem.
Well, that impresses me as a serious problem, and I know it's true because I've been hearing about it for years and years, and it apparently has not gone away. But I'm thinking of the John Stossel presentation on his Fox News program last night, and I think he was rather flip, and it was more about posturing than getting real information out, and I usually expect more of him, more from him than that. Heike, what's your impression of this headline and the story? Would you take it seriously, reading this?
I'm a skeptic.
Skeptic.
I don't like articles or authors or speakers that use, always, never.
Inflammatory absolutes, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I guess I'm kind of more take a practical approach. And while we were in Cyber Never Never Land here during our issue, the three of us were discussing what we can do as a consumer to fix the problem, because I'm a doer and I need a to-do list. And so I was just asking Don, what can I do to help save the bees? And Don, maybe you can comment on what we talked about.
Well, yeah, I think the one of the things that this article kind of points out is pesticides. Well, if you think about here in the South, we have a tendency to use a lot of pesticides, insecticides, because we've got a lot of critters. I mean, we've got roaches, we've got spiders, we've got scorpions. We got a lot of stuff that we were not to have in the houses, and so in our homes and living space, as well as the wasp and the mm-hmm. all kinds of bees. So the pesticide use, we've got fire ant problem. So spreading, for example, insecticides to kill off the fire ants. I mean, if I were to do that, I've got 17 acres. I've got to spread that stuff around. That's going to have an impact on the environment. So just being mindful of what you're doing and try to eliminate use of chemical warfare against nature, for example, against God's creation, is one way to keep it. They mentioned imidacloprid. Well, unfortunately, that's the insecticide of choice for vineyards, for example, in this area, to keep a insect called a sharpshooter, off your vines. Which causes a disease called Pierce disease, and which can wipe you out as a vineyard owner if that disease gets a hold. And the poor sharpshooter, he's just doing what he does best, but he's carrying a bacteria that wipes out the vines. Well, I've chosen not to use imidacloprid. I used last year, but I'm not using it this year. One of the reasons is because of the impact that it has on the environment. And I'm kind of taking my chances, but I'm using a more natural approach to that problem, and we'll see.
So considering your choices with respect to pesticides and insecticides generally is one way. What about buying organic? I mean, everybody needs money for their favorite cause here, and I'm not sure I want to contribute to some website to save the bees, but I'm wondering if just by redirecting my grocery purchases to organic produce, if that helps in some small way.
Well, it could help in a large way if a lot of people did it. I mean, if we demanded, again, non-genetically modified foods, or at least just labeling on the foods that we do buy. Heike was talking about, there's a lot of secondary foods that we don't necessarily think are genetically modified. For example, beef. But, the beef has to eat the corn, which is genetically modified. So you're getting genetically, modified products, even with your steaks and your hamburgers. So knowing places where you can get safe foods, if you will, is a good way. And we've talked about, you know, how the government's trying to shut down the small farmer in every way possible, from us to get healthy foods like that. But that is certainly a way to, you know, to help the bees. The more diverse that we have, more diversity that we have in the last of this genetically modified stuff that we are putting in the environment, I think the better off.
And Heike, maybe a word too from you on this, because we've talked about purchasing raw milk and other organic products. Does it make sense to contact a local farmer, maybe? Because some of them are in the business of doing that.
Yeah, maybe. I'm a local, a pure corn out there anymore.
We're losing you here.
Because companies that control seed have become so... can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, better now. It's getting better.
Can you hear me? I'm concerned that there isn't a pure corn out there anymore, because the big companies have become so pervasive in the seed industry that I don't mean to be a pessimist, but I'm a little concerned that there is no such thing as a non-genetically modified corn anymore, that even if we've tried to get it back, that it's kind of the DNA is messed up for good. So I don't know. I mean, anytime you can go with a local farmer, you can cut out the middleman. You've saved gas, you've saved pollution, you've saved a lot of things. And then you can look the farmer in the eye and you can say, all right, what do you really put in this cow, or what do you really plant in your garden? I think that's better than nothing. But I also am not very hopeful that there's a lot of pure organic seed left out there.
And even if you do look at that farmer in the eye and ask what he put in the cow, for a great deal of it, he doesn't know himself.
Absolutely. I mean, I raise chickens in my backyard, but I don't go by organic feed because it's just not cost effective for me. And so I know that I'm feeding my chickens GMO corn because that's what's available to me, and I'm not in a position to raise my own corn that's not GMO and then make my own feed. So for me, I have to make a very difficult decision. There is a balance between the economics, and it takes a lot longer to raise a chicken on organic corn than it does on the other stuff that you buy. So I'm contributing to the problem somewhat myself.
Maybe we can help this then just by biting the bullet a little bit as consumers and redirecting, not be spending a little more, no doubt, maybe doing out without some other things that aren't as essential, but redirecting your food dollars to organic sources, whether it's a local farmer's market or a local farm or a health food store, and really support that industry. And not only would you be eating healthier, but you would be making a statement to the rest of the country, and they would pay attention to that, because dollars command respect more so than principle, I'm afraid. But I think that's the society we're living in. We've been talking with Dr. Don Clark, who's a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments, a wonderful website over at creationmoments.org. You can link there from our website if you would like and learn more about this, and we'll post our conversation from this morning, such as it was, and I apologize for the long break in the middle here. I think we've got it solved. But we'll post this as a podcast, along with a link to this article on Mercola, M-E-R-C-O-L-A, Mercola.com. So you can inform yourself and find out what's happening to the bees, and maybe consider some of the possible root causes, and maybe help come up with some solutions. It does look like it's a threat indeed. Don, thank you so much. Appreciate the time you spent, the extra time today, too. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. We had a good conversation between the three of us.
Yeah, I missed most of it. I missed most of it here. We'll have Don join us again next Monday. Right now, the Martins sing. Tired, frustrated, and feeling down. End of the day left you wearing a frown.